Hello, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today is Andrew Hill, a pianist and composer of extraordinary talent. His spare and angular style and his rhythmic and melodic concepts are his alone. His harmonic ideas fall into the same pattern of quiet brilliance. All in all, a thought-provoking glance into the avant-garde. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you for coming.
It's an honor to be included.
I've been listening to your music, and I certainly have a lot to learn. Boy, different people have different ways of putting a chord together or a melody. The way you do things is quite extraordinary, as I said, very unusual. So I'm really looking forward to hearing you playing this tune, Nicodemus. That's a great title. I love it.
This was one of my forays into 5/4.
A foray into 5/4.
Because it was named after a town that used to exist in Ohio called Nicodemus. It's a long history to it, so I heard the story. And you know, sometimes you write these compositions and don't have titles for it, so I say, well, that's a good title for it, Nicodemus.
That's a wonderful title. Well, I'm going to sit quiet and listen very carefully.
Thank you.
Now, that's what I find interesting. It's Nicodemus. Mm-hmm. And you went through a lot of different key changes, didn't you?
Two or three.
And it ended in F?
In F minor.
F minor.
And it started on an F7 with an augmented 11.
You know, I'm so bad at calling chords.
So am I, but
it's terrible.
People used to question me so much that I had to think of a name for everything, even though I may not feel the name. But this F7 really reminded me of an opportunity to play in two keys at once, because you have the A-flat and you have the F.
You have an F7th, and then you play in two keys at once.
Because you... And then you have B-flat. Then you have E-flat also.
I never thought of it that way. So how about another tune?
Okay.
So what's this tune called?
It's called Blue Black. It was a saying in the 60s and 70s that the only true black person was the blue person. Because if you would go back to Africa, which was say unmutated, unevolved, look more blue than they look black, you know, because, you know, we have such color for racial, you know, connotations.
That different grades of color.
Different grades of color that none of it really mean anything. That's why.
But you can put it all into music.
But you can put it all into music as a color.
Pretty strange. Okay, I'm listening. Thank you. Blueback. That is a really interesting title for that tune because it goes everywhere. It goes into different colors, key-wise, different keys, and it's very aptly titled, I would say.
Well, that's really almost the joke about it. It's called Blueback based upon original black men, etc., but it's inclusive of all the races because, like you said, it has something from every various color thrown into it and projected. So that's why I call it Blueback. Not that it's just representative of one culture, but it's representative of all the cultures.
I'm in that thing, too.
Yeah, you are.
Well, there'll be more in a minute with Andrew Hill. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I was wondering, when you got started playing, were you just a little kid in Chicago?
Yeah, when I started playing, I guess as a little kid in Chicago, jazz was, you know, like a popular music. I remember going to the Blue Note, I think, as a kid to hear you and your husband, Jimmy.
You did?
Yes.
No kidding.
Yeah, because they could sneak us in on Sundays. Due to my father, I could sneak into certain places as a kid and just stay out the way. But I could participate if I could become invisible, in a sense.
Well, did your father play piano? Did he get you started?
No, he loved music. I just started because it was so much music around. You know, like they had the Regal Theater at that time.
Oh, sure.
Where they had the stage shows and everything. And down the street from that was the Savoy Ballroom. And then right. The Hurricane Lounge, where
absolutely,
you know, so one could really just get this encyclopedia of knowledge from all these beautiful people playing so differently.
I can imagine how that was because Jimmy and I, when we were finished at the Brass Rail, we would go out to the South Side to hear Charlie Ventura and Jackie and Roy, and we also went to hear Red Saunders
at the Club de Lisa.
The Club de Lisa, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Gee, you're reminding me of all our old haunts from years ago.
You reminded me of my childhood.
Yeah. But you met Earl Hines. Was he like your first teacher, or did he?
He was really, in a sense, my first teacher because I hadn't, you know, taken lessons prior. But as fate would have it, he had a suite in a place on Oakwood Boulevard called the New Grand Terrace Hotel and Ballroom.
Oh, goodness.
You know, I was real young, so they let me have a paper out, even though I couldn't carry all the papers that most paper boys had. You know, they had 200 or 300 pounds. I was satisfied with my 25 pounds.
About how old were you then?
11, 12. I was satisfied with that because that would give me the change that I wanted to go and listen to these various sites, Southside, because all the places used to have these sophisticated sound system, you know, where you could just stay outside and hear the music. So anyway, so I found ways of disturbing Mr. Hines in the morning that he came to the door one morning to speak his mind in a nice way, and I was able to get his attention for a moment, and then we started building a relationship.
That's great, because he was a great player. I worked with him quite a lot. We went to South America together, myself and Earl and Teddy Wilson. Mm-hmm. Did you know Teddy?
I met him, but I didn't know him. I met Teddy and a George DeVivier.
Oh, what a wonderful bass player.
Yeah, but Teddy, I never did get to know that well.
Yeah, but Earl, I did know quite well, and of course I learned a lot listening to him put a program together for the people in Argentina. We played there, but I guess he he thought a lot of you. He saw that you had great talent, didn't he?
Well, it would be kind of self-serving for me to say, oh, he saw that I had this incredible talent. But I'm really appreciative of the fact that he was a kind and considerate person.
Well, then later you got to study with Bill Russo?
Yeah, I got to study with Bill. He was performing with Stan Kenton. He had just come back in town, and he was giving music lessons. So I paid for a series and studied a little bit with him.
Well, and then I guess the crowning pleasure must have been to study with Paul Hindemith. Was that later?
No, it was in the same time I met Bill Russo. That's how I got this partial introduction to him, because I think he was in Chicago to work on Schoenberg, music he had to conduct, something of Schoenberg. You know, I found out all this later in life. I wasn't musically literate, so I couldn't tell you who Hindemith was or who Schoenberg. But these things, sometimes you have to do research on different people to find out just who they were and what effect they had on your life.
Well, obviously you did research them, and they did have an effect on your life. I mean, hearing you play, I would know that you got a great deal out of those people. Mm-hmm. And actually, what I would love to do is for us to play a duet together. And do you think we could do something like A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square?
Oh, that's one of my favorite compositions.
Well, let's do it. We don't have to rehearse it. We'll just play it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think we sound good together.
Oh, you sounded great. I was just trying to keep up with you. You were hot.
That's such a nice tune.
It's a beautiful tune.
I'm glad you like it because it's funny. That goes back to, I guess it was very popular in World War II and a lot of English singers. That's where I learned it, I guess, off the BBC.
That's what they say. It was very popular in England during the war.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Nightingales sang in Berkeley Square. That's,
yeah.
That's a beautiful song.
How did you learn that tune?
Well, let's see. I heard Stan Getz played it. He sounded beautiful on it. And then I first played it with Von Freeman in Chicago when I was playing with him. It was such a lovely tune. And then I heard Johnny Hartman's. You know, I heard a few people sing it, but the song is so dynamic that it almost just stands up on its own.
Yes.
No matter who does it, it's beautiful.
That's true. Stan Getz, anything he would do would sound so beautiful, the tone that man had. Well, you must have met just about everybody when you were living in Chicago.
Well, all those that were known, you know, for that period, if I hadn't met him as a kid growing up, I met him in other places in Chicago and got a chance to play with a few of them, get to know a few of them.
What was your first gig playing piano with a group?
Well, my first gig was with a fellow named Tommy Madman Jones out of Chicago.
Tommy Madman Jones?
Tommy, saxophone player, I used to love him. He used to come in and get me for these jobs where we would play popular music, play the standards of the day or the jazz. And, you know, so it was quite a few old musicians, so they would insist that I learn each song that they play. You know, sometimes you can have what I call relative or similar chords, a progression that will fit everything, but they insisted that where there was an augmented. They were strict. But it was good. And then to my first gig, which I really call my first job, when I received this call to go to Detroit with Buzz Freeman and his group to play with Charlie Parker at the Greystone Ballroom.
Now, that must have been a great kick for you, you probably didn't realize at the time.
It blew my mind because my introduction to jazz is past Earl Fotherhand, Hotliff Page, etc., names that crept into my psyche as a kid was hearing Charlie Parker play Now's the Time through the door of a customer while I was delivering the newspaper. You know, like it sounded just invigorated me as a kid to hear that. You know, so then, you know, I asked him about it. He said, well, what I'm trying to do is play rhythm, not chords. You know, so that really is when I first got this concept of melody as a rhythm.
Wait a minute, a concept of melody as a rhythm.
Yeah, melody, of course, he was saying what he was playing, basically, you know, it still was within the dominant tonic tradition, but the rhythm curve that got them past that.
That was just a blues, wasn't it?
It was just a blues, but then certain inflections he made on his solo, he said was more rhythmic than they were harmonic and melodic.
Such an easy tune.
just here. That's funny.
Oh, I haven't played that tune for an age.
Even had no desire to play it until then.
Well, I just figured we're talking about it. We might as well play it. Well, if you're just tuning in, my guest today is Andrew Hill. For more information about piano jazz and a list of the tunes performed on today's program, visit our website at pianojazz.org. Our program is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company, manufacturers of the pianos heard on Piano Jazz. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I'm not sure if I've got the right title for this tune, Andrew, but it was something that you did on a record that was a piano solo. It might have been Tough Love, but in any case, it was a beautiful tune.
Well, I have this tune, and man, I don't remember Tough Love exactly, but maybe this will come close to what you heard.
That's beautiful. I don't know whether that's called Tough Love or just Love.
Well, I think if we title it completely new, we'll call it Love.
That's what we should call it. While you were playing, I was thinking about one of your tunes that I was listening to, and you had the bass player kind of set up a rhythm, and then all the players kind of played on top of it their own improvisation. I mean, maybe we could do something like that.
I would love to.
Couldn't we? Like a totally free piece we will make up as we go along?
Let's go.
Something?
Let's go.
Yeah. I had to have the last word.
Go ahead. Like I said, you put a fellow in trouble if you don't watch it, so.
It's yeah. fun playing.
It is. I enjoy it. You know, at first, it used to be serious thing. I wanted to be the best and all that, but I said, let's face it, I just love to hear the piano play.
I just think I played something. I don't know how good I played, but
it was good. I think we were spontaneous that time.
Yes, spontaneous is the right word. That's just it. You've got to not
right
have
in the
it.
Tradition of things, being spontaneous.
You don't have it all laid out, but spontaneous is the word. And I was thinking that what I would like to do is do kind of a musical portrait of you. Could I try and do that?
I would love. And I would be honored. So honored.
Think to myself, this is thinking in my head, this is a very jolly guy with a lot of personality, a lot of interesting ideas to play, and I'm just going to develop it from there. I don't know what it's going to be like, but is that all right? Can I try it?
I'd be honored by the thought.
Okay.
I've really enjoyed that portrait, Marion. I feel honored with you putting all the vast musical ingredients. I could detect a little bit of everything there, and it's always good.
Well, I'm just trying to add what I see. And I mean, I've only met you today. If mm-hmm. I met you years ago, mm-hmm. it might be different. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to something I haven't really heard before. The things you're playing are all new to me, and they're wonderful. Well, we have more in a minute with Andrew Hill. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz, I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR on the web at pianojazz.org. Are you going to play another tune, Andrew, I hope?
I would be honored to play another tune. I would say I would try to capture you, but I'm so fragmented, it may not do you
Go
justice,
ahead.
But I'll say it's inspired by
I
you.
I dare you. That was beautiful. Me in a minor key and some very tender chords. I liked that a lot.
Oh, bless your heart.
It's beautiful.
Thank you, Mary.
I hate that we have to finish, but you know, we've been here quite a while. We've got a lot of different tunes done, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, just say, I'll be loving you always.
Do you know that tune? I'll tell you what, we could do our own thing on that tune, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could.
We could.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Let's do it. What key? Will you go ahead?
Wherever you hit, wherever we land at.
Okay. What a great way to end the show.
Well, oh, you're terrific.
That was so nice. I'm glad you thought of that.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with host Marian McPartland. Marian's guest today has been Andrew Hill. Join us again next time as Marian welcomes another outstanding jazz artist for an hour of conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is recorded at Manhattan Beat Studios in New York and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant engineer Chinook Kang, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production coordinator David Lyon. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. If you wish to contact us, our email address is pianojazz@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Jazz Times Magazine, delivering jazz news, insight, and advice for 35 years at newsstands everywhere and on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and Redwood Creek Winery, makers of wines inspired by the adventurous spirit of California. The journey begins online at redwoodcreek.com. And the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art.